As I walked through the wilderness of this world, I lighted on a certain place where was a den, and laid me down in that place to sleep. And as I slept, I dreamed a dream. I dreamed, and behold, I saw a man clothed with rags, standing in a certain place. His face was turned away from his own house. He had in his hand a book, and upon his back a great burden. As I looked, I saw him open the book and read therein. And as he read, he wept and trembled. And not being able longer to contain, he broke out with a most lamentable cry.
What shall I do? Oh, what shall I do?
In this plight, therefore, he went home and restrained himself as long as he could, that his wife and children should not perceive his distress. But he could not long be silent, because that his trouble increased. Wherefore at length he brake his mind to his wife and children, and thus he began to talk to them.
Oh, my dear wife, and you, the children of my bowels, I, your dear friend, am in myself undone by reason of a burden that lieth hard upon me.
Burden? What burden, my dear?
I don't see any burden, Papa.
Though you see it not, yet it liketh to crush out my life beneath its weight.
Dear, dear, an invisible burden, so heavy as to crush out your life? What can it be?
Hear me, my dear ones. I am most certainly informed that this, our city, will soon be burned with fire from heaven.
What? Burned down?
Yes, burned to ashes.
No.
Yes, and in that fearful overthrow we shall all miserably come to our ruin.
My dear husband.
And as for a way of escape, I can see none.
None?
None?
None. We are doomed to perish with our town of destruction.
Now at this, his relations were sore amazed, not because they believed that what he had said to them was true, but because they thought that some frenzied distemper had got into his head. Therefore, since it was drawing toward night, they got him to bed with all haste in the hopes that some sound sleep might settle his brains.
Ah, oh, woe is me. Lost and undone am I. All lost.
But the night was as troublesome to him as the day. Wherefore, instead of sleeping, he spent it in sighs and tears.
Ah, what shall become of me, wicked man that I am?
Now when morning was come, they would know how he did.
Art thou happy now, dear father?
Yes, how goes it with thee, dear husband?
Worse.
Worse?
Worse, and yet more worse.
Oh, dear. What shall we do for thee, poor man?
We must set ourselves to study and prayer that we may know how to escape this city of destruction.
Escape? My dear, there is nothing to escape from. Come now to thy right senses, ere the magistrates declare thee to be lunatic.
No. No, we must escape forthwith. But how? Only how?
Husband, come to thyself.
So they, believing him to be taken with the distemper, sought to drive it away by behaving towards him with utmost hardness and disrespect. Sometimes they would deride him, sometimes chide him. At other times, they would quite neglect him. Wherefore he began to retire himself to his chamber, to pray for and pity them, and also to condole his own misery. He would also walk solitary in the fields, sometimes reading, and sometimes praying. And thus, for some time, he spent his days. Now I saw, upon a time, when he was walking in the fields, that he was, as he was wont, reading in his book, and greatly distressed in his mind. And as he read, he burst out as he had done before, crying,
Oh, wretched man that I am! What shall I do to be saved?
I saw also that he looked this way and that way, as if he would run. Yet he stood still, because, as I perceived, he could not tell which way to go. I looked then and saw a man named Evangelist coming to him.
Good day.
Good day. And who art thou?
My employer hath named me Evangelist.
Oh, woe is me. Woe is me.
Good sir, wherefore dost thou cry?
Because, sir, I perceive by the book in my hand that if I remain in this city of destruction, I am condemned to die.
Ah.
And I find that I am not willing to die. Neither am I able to come to judgment.
Why not willing to die, since this life is attended with so many evils?
Because I fear that this burden that is upon my back will sink me lower than the grave, and that I shall fall into hell.
I see.
And good sir, I be not fit to go to judgment, much less to my execution. It is the thoughts of these things make me cry.
Well then, why standest thou still here?
Because I know not whither to go.
I then saw that he gave him a parchment roll, and there was written therein, "Flee from the wrath to come."
Good sir, I know that I must flee. But whither must I fly?
Over there, across that wide, wide field. Do you see yonder wicket gate?
I... no.
Do you see yonder shining light?
I think I do.
Keep that light in your eye, and go directly thereto. So shalt thou see the gate, at which when thou knockest, it shall be told thee what thou shalt do to inherit eternal life.
I shall, good sir. I shall.
See that thou take not thine eye off the light.
I shan't. Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
So I saw in my dream that the man began to run. Now, he had not run far from his own door when his wife and children, perceiving it, began to cry after him.
Mama, look! To whom, Daddy?
Husband, where are you going?
To life. Life. Eternal life.
Papa, where are you going?
Father, come back.
Christian, you come back here this minute. Do you hear me? Come back this instant.
Life. Life, eternal life.
Mama, he's put his fingers in his ears.
He can't hear us.
Fool man. His brain's so addled, he won't hear. Christian!
Papa, come back.
Come on, Daddy.
Come, look. It's Christian.
Aye, he's finally flipped his wig, he has.
The fool man. Come back before you lose your way.
Ah, let the fool go. Better off we are without the likes of him around here.
What's all the excitement, lads?
Oh, the fool has finally lost his mind and runs amok.
Aye, straight into trouble he goes.
So, he's finally made a break for it, eh?
Oh, dear. Oh, me. Oh, obstinate. I just knew this would happen, what with him reading that book all the time.
Yes, Brother Pliable. We should have taken it away from him as soon as we saw the distemper settle on him.
Oh, dear. Oh, me. Now, what can we say to save the dear soul?
Say? Nay. Not what we say we'll do, but what we do will do.
Your meaning escapes me, dear obstinate. Do clarify.
Foolish Pliable. He has his ears all stopped up. He will hear no language but that of animal power.
Clarify more, dear sir. Do clarify.
Can't you see? We must needs go fetch him back by force.
Oh, splendid idea. Simply splendid. Shall we off?
Off with us. Don't worry, madam. We'll save him from his distemper yet. Christian!
Sirrah, wait up.
Christian, hold up.
Neighbors, wherefore are ye come?
To persuade you to go back with us.
That can by no means be, for you dwell in the city of destruction, and sooner or later you with that city will sink into a place that burns with fire and brimstone. Therefore, good neighbors, go along with me and deliver thy souls.
What? And leave our friends and comforts behind us?
Yes, because that all of which you forsake is not worthy to be compared with a little of that which I am seeking to enjoy.
And what are the things you seek that are worth the leaving of all the world?
I seek an inheritance incorruptible, undefiled, and that fadeth not away.
Where?
It is laid up for me in heaven, and kept safe for me there.
And when shall you receive this inheritance?
I shall receive it at the time appointed, as shall all of them that diligently seek it. Here, you may read of it in my book if you will.
Tush! Away with your book! Will you go back with us or no?
No, not I, because I have put my hands to the plow.
Come then, neighbor Pliable. Let us turn again and go home without him. He is obviously one of those crazy-headed coxcombs that, having once gotten an idea in their crown, cannot bear good reason.
Now, don't revile the dear man, friend Obstinate. Actually, my heart inclines to go with him.
What? More fools still? Who knows whither such a brain-sick fellow will lead you? Come away with me, and be wise.
Nay, but do thou come with thy neighbor, Pliable. There are such things to be had which I spoke of, and many more glories besides. If you believe not me, read here in this book.
Books! Who knoweth but what it is all a lie?
As for the truth of what is expressed therein, behold, all is confirmed by the blood of him that made it.
Well, neighbor Obstinate, I begin to come to a point of decision.
Being what?
I intend to go along with this good man and to cast in my lot with him.
What? And leave behind common sense and good reason?
Methinks that friend Christian here partakes of these things as well as you.
What?
Yes, so am I persuaded.
Tush, lunatics, the both of you. He doesn't even know the way.
Tell me, my good companion, do you know the way to this desired place?
Oh, yes. A man named Evangelist directed me to speed me on to a little gate that is just before us.
Where?
Over yonder meadow.
I see no gate.
There is no gate.
Do you see yonder bright light?
Yes, I think so.
We must keep our eyes fast upon that light, and presently we shall come to yonder wicket gate, whereat we shall receive instructions about the way.
Well, come then, good neighbor. Let us be going. Will you join us, Obstinate?
Of a certain not. I will be no companion of such misled, fantastical fellows as you. Back to my place with me.
Now I saw in my dream that, when Obstinate was gone back, Christian and Pliable went talking over the plain, and thus they began their discourse.
Come, neighbor Pliable, how do you do? I am glad that you are persuaded to go along with me.
As am I. Indeed, as am I.
If only Obstinate had but felt the powers and terrors of what is yet unseen, he would not thus lightly have given us the back.
Come, neighbor Christian, tell me now further what the things are, and how to be enjoyed whither we are going.
I will read you of them in my book.
And do you truly think that the words of your book are certainly true?
Yes, verily, for it was made by him that cannot lie.
How nice. What things are they?
Well, there is an endless kingdom to be inhabited.
Endless, you say?
Aye, and an everlasting life to be given us, that we may inhabit that kingdom forever.
My, and what else?
There are crowns of glory to be given us, and garments that will make us to shine like the sun in the firmament of heaven.
Really?
Yes.
And what else?
There shall be no more crying, nor sorrow, for he that is owner of the place will wipe away all tears from our eyes.
And what company shall we have there?
There we shall be with seraphims and cherubims, creatures so beautiful that they shall dazzle your eyes to look on them.
Dazzle my eyes? Oh, my.
There also you shall meet with thousands and 10,000s that have gone before us to that place. None of them hurtful, but every one loving and holy.
How lovely.
Every one of them walking in the sight of God and standing in his presence with acceptance forever.
Absolutely marvelous.
There we shall see the elders with their golden crowns, the holy virgins with their golden harps. There we shall see men that by the world were cut in pieces, burnt in flames, and eaten of beasts, drowned in the seas, for the love they bear for the Lord of that place. There they shall all be well, and clothed with immortality as with a garment.
Marvelous. Simply marvelous. The hearing of this is enough to ravish one's heart. But how shall we get to be sharers in these things?
The Lord, the governor of the country, hath told us how in this book.
What does it say?
Well, in brief, if we be truly willing to have it, he will bestow it upon us freely.
Well, I certainly qualify for that. Come, let us pick up the pace a bit.
Oh, I cannot, by reason of this burden that is on my back.
Strange.
What is?
That there is no burden upon my back.
Yes.
How came it upon you?
It came upon me gradually, whilst I read this, my book.
It seems, then, that this little book is not a blessing unmixed with sorrow.
Aye, it has indeed caused me much grief and brought this burden upon me. Oh, but I trow that this which has shown me my need shall yet show me my deliverance.
I should hope so.
Would you like to read it?
Oh, dear, no. I'd prefer to go forth without the burden which said book is laid upon your back. Thank you.
Now I saw in my dream that just as they had ended this talk, they drew nigh to a very miry slough that was in the midst of the plain. And they, being heedless and unwatchful, did both miss the steps provided for them and fell quite suddenly into the bog. The name of the slough was Despond. Here, therefore, they wallowed for a time, being grievously bedaubed with dirt. And Christian, because of the burden that was on his back, began to sink into the mire.
Ah, neighbor Christian, where are you now?
Truly, I do not know.
Is this the happiness you've been telling me of all this while?
Blame me not, gentle neighbor. I know not what has come upon us.
Well, if we have such ill speed at our first setting out, what may we expect between this and our journey's end?
Whatever it may be, we shall find that country to be cheap enough.
Ah, may I just get out of this miry muck with my life, and I shall be content to let you possess the brave country for you and me both.
And with that, he gave a desperate struggle or two and got out of the mire.
Free at last. Farewell to thee and thy foolish dreams of yonder glories.
Pliable, thou gettest thee out on the wrong side of the slough.
Better on the wrong side and out than on the right side and in, as you are.
But thou givest thy back
to the light.
Bah! To be the more honest with you, I never did see any such light as you speak of, and I frankly doubt that you do either. Fare thee well, foolish dreamer.
And so, having gotten out on the side of the slough, which was next to his own house, away he went, and Christian saw him no more.
Oh, dear me!
Wherefore, Christian was left to tumble in the slough of despond, alone.
Oh!
But still he endeavored to struggle to that side of the slough which was farthest from his own house, and nearest to the wicket gate.
Oh, dear me! Who can tell whose state is worse? He and his return to yonder doomed city, or I in this place of death? If I can just get out.
And try to get out he did, but could not because of the burden that was upon his back.
Oh, weary, so weary. Can it be that here, at the start of my journey, I shall end it? O Lord of the far country, send help, I pray.
Hello, who goes there?
It is I, Christian.
And what do you in the Slough of Despond?
Sir, I was bidden to come this way by a man called Evangelist. And as I was going there, I fell in here.
But why did you not look for the steps?
Steps?
Steps.
Why, fear followed me so hard, and I was so intent on fleeing that, well, that I scarce had time to look for any steps.
Give me thine hand. Out you come now.
Oh, thank you, good sir. Oh, thank you very much.
Thank him that has sent me.
Yes, I shall. And what be thy name?
My master hath named me Help.
Why, you are the very one I called for.
Of course.
Sir?
Yes?
Since over this slough is the only way from the city of destruction to yonder wicket gate, why is it that the walkway over is not mended?
This miry slough is such a place as cannot be mended.
Oh?
It is the descent, whether the scum and filth that attend conviction for sin do continually run. And therefore it is called the Slough of Despond.
Aha! And well named it is.
More than you know. For, as the sinner is awakened by his lost condition, there arise in his soul many fears.
Such as I fled from.
Yes, and doubts, and discouraging apprehensions, which all of them get together and settle in this place. And this is the reason for the badness of the ground.
I think I understand. For all of these things did thickly fill my mind. But is there no way that the king might fill this place?
He has tried. Here have been swallowed up millions of cartloads of wholesome instructions, but all to no avail.
Then must all pilgrims suffer in the mire of despond, as I have done?
Not if they keep their eyes fixed on yonder light, which lights up certain good and substantial steps placed here by the direction of the lawgiver. Did not Evangelist tell thee to keep thine eye fixed on the light?
Yes, sir. I must have cast my eyes on my circumstances, for I never saw any steps.
A common mistake. But be assured, the king has placed steps in the very midst of this slough, which can be found by any who keep their eyes upon the light.
A lesson too late learned for this pilgrim.
But take courage. He is faithful and just to forgive you and to cleanse you from all this mire upon you. And the ground is good when once you get in at the gate. Godspeed.
Thank you, sir. Farewell.
Now I saw in my dream that by this time Pliable was got home to his own house. So his neighbors came to visit him.
So you've come back, have ye? A fool you were to go as far as you did with the likes of Christian. Look at yourself. All slimed and bedaubed with dirt.
Well, at least he was wise enough to come to his senses.
Surely, since you began to venture, you should not have been so base as to have given up for a few difficulties.
And so Pliable sat, ashamed and sneaking among them. But as time passed, his cowardice was forgotten, and his confidence grew, until he was able to join all the others in deriding poor Christian behind his back. And this was all I saw concerning Pliable. Now, as Christian was walking solitary by himself, he espied one afar off come crossing over the field to meet him. The gentleman's name was Mr. Worldly Wiseman. He dwelt in the town of Carnal Policy, a very great town, and also hard by from whence Christian came. And their hap was to meet just as they were crossing each the way of the other.
Ho! How goes?
Greetings, jolly sir.
How now, good fellow? Whither away after this burdened and besmeared manner?
To yonder wicket gate before me, for there I shall be put into a way to be rid of my heavy burden.
Yonder wicket gate?
Yes.
Who did put thee to go this way to be rid of thy burden?
A man that appeared to me to be a very great and honorable person. His name, as I remember, is Evangelist.
Evangelist, you say?
Yes.
Bah! I beshrew him for his evil counsel. There is not a more dangerous and troublesome way in the world than is that into which he hath directed thee.
Indeed?
In fact, I perceive that thou hast met with something already. Do not I see upon thy person the dirt and slime of the Slough of Despond?
I took my eyes off the light and did miss the steps.
Well, let me tell you that that slough is but the beginning of the sorrows that do attend those that go on in that way.
It is.
Yes. Thou art like to meet with, in the way which thou goest, wearisomeness, painfulness, hunger, perils, nakedness, sword, lions, dragons, darkness, and, well, to cut my list short, death and what not all else.
Oh, my.
Aye, oh, my, indeed. And these things are certainly true, having been confirmed by the many testimonies of those coming back.
But I tell you, sir, methinks I care not what I meet with in the way. If so be, I can also meet with deliverance from my burden.
I see. Well, then, let us analyze this situation logically. Tell me first, how camest thou by this great burden?
By the reading of this book in my hand.
Just as I feared. It has happened unto thee as unto other weak men who, meddling with things too high for them, do suddenly fall into thy distractions. Which distractions do not only unman men, as thine, I perceive, have done thee, but they run them upon desperate ventures to obtain they know not what.
But I know what I would obtain.
What?
It is ease for my heavy burden.
But of course. But why wilt thou seek for ease this way?
Knowest thou a better way?
Yea, verily. And the remedy is near at hand.
It is.
Yes. And in this way, instead of those great and many dangers, thou shalt meet with much peace and safety.
Why, sir, I pray thee open this secret to me.
'Tis simple. Over there, in yonder village named Morality, there dwells a gentleman whose name is Legality. A very judicious man.
Oh?
Yes, a man of very good name that has skill to help men off with such burdens as weigh upon thy shoulder.
Indeed?
Hey. To my knowledge, he hath done a great deal of good this way.
It sounds to be just the thing.
It is. And since his house is not quite a mile from this place, you may go to him and be helped right off.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. And if he should perchance not be at home himself, he hath a pretty young man to his son, whose name is Civility, that can relieve thee quite as well as the old gentleman himself.
Why, such good fortune.
Yes, there you may be eased of thy burden.
Sir, if these things which thou speakest of be true, then my wisest course is to take your advice.
Yes, but of course.
Sir, which is the way to this honest man's house?
Do you see yonder high hill?
Yes, very well. I have been walking in its shadow since I began my travels.
'Tis called Mount Sinai. Up that hill you must go, and the first house at the top is his.
So Christian turned out of his way to go to Mr. Legality's house for help. But behold, when he was got now hard by the hill, it seemed so high, and also that side of it that was next to the wayside did hang so much over the path that Christian was afraid to venture farther, lest the hill should fall on his head. Wherefore, there he stood still, and wotted not what to do. Also, his burden now seemed heavier to him than while he was in his way. There came also flashes of fire out of the hill that made Christian afraid that he should be burnt. Here, therefore, he sweat and did quake for fear. And now he began to be sorry that he had taken Mr. Worldly Wiseman's counsel. And with that, he saw Evangelist coming to meet him, at the sight also of whom he began to blush for shame. So Evangelist looked upon him with a severe and dreadful countenance, and thus began to reason with Christian.
What doest thou here, Christian? Art thou not the man that I found crying without the walls of the city of destruction?
Yes, dear sir, I am the man.
Did not I direct thee the way to the little wicket gate?
Yes, sir.
How is it, then, that thou art so quickly turned aside? For thou art now out of the way.
I met with a gentleman as soon as I had got over the Slough of Despond, who persuaded me that I might climb this Mount Sinai and find at its top the village Morality, where I might meet a man that could relieve me of my burden.
I see.
And so I foolishly believed him, and turned me out of that way into this, if haply I might soon indeed be eased of my burden. But when I came to this place, and beheld things as they are, I stopped for fear of danger. But I now know not what to do.
Stand still a little, that I might show thee the words of God.
Yes, sir.
Now, the just shall live by faith, but thou hast begun to reject the counsel of the Most High, and to draw back thy foot from the way of peace, even almost to the hazarding of thy perdition.
Oh, woe is me, for I am undone.
Stand thee up on thy feet.
Yes, sir.
Fear not, poor Christian, for all manner of sin and blasphemy shall be forgiven unto men. Be not faithless, but believing.
Oh, is it even so? May I be forgiven?
Aye, if thou canst believe. All things are possible to him that believeth.
I believe, only help thou mine unbelief.
That man that met thee in the way was one Worldly Wise Man. His counsel was near to be the death of thee.
Yes, sir.
The Lord says, strive to enter in at the strait gate, the gate to which I sent thee. For strait is the gate which leadeth unto life, and few there be that find it.
Yes, sir.
He to whom thou wast sent for thine ease, the man called Legality, is the son of the bondwoman which is yet in sin's bondage with all her children. She is revealed unto thee in this Mount Sinai.
Aye, which I had greatly feared would fall on my head.
So it would have been had thou not stopped. But if Legality and his mother and his brethren are yet in bondage, how canst thou expect by them to be made free?
I don't know what I thought.
This Legality, is not able to set thee free from thy burden. Ye cannot be justified by the works of the law, for by the deeds of the law can no man living be rid of his burden.
Yes, I have read it in my book.
Which thing thou shouldest have quoted unto the adversary and cut his arguments to the marrow.
I forgot.
Which led thee nearly to thy destruction.
Yes.
And by which thy burden was made none the lighter.
Nay, but more the heavier.
Therefore, Mr. Worldly Wiseman is an alien, and Mr. Legality is a cheat. And as for his son, Civility, notwithstanding his simpering looks, he is but a hypocrite and cannot help thee.
I can see them clearly for what they are now. God forbid that I shall ever be thus deceived again.
I call upon the heavens for confirmation that my words are not my own, but those of him who sent me.
As many as are of the works of the law are under the curse. For it is written, cursed is everyone that continueth not in all things which are written in the book of the law to do them.
Oh, I fear for my life. Oh, curse the time that I stopped to parley with the enemy. Oh, curse my forgetfulness of the promises. Oh, I have played the part of 1,000 fools times 10,000 fools.
Praise to God that thy eyes have been opened.
And shame to me that they ever should have thus been closed by arguments that flowed only from the flesh. Shame to me that worldly wise logic should have prevailed against the words of truth. Sir, what think you? Is there any hope for me?
There is hope.
May I now turn and go up to the wicket gate?
You may go.
Shall I not be abandoned for this sin, and be sent back from thence ashamed?
You shall not be sent back, for the man at the gate hath come for to bring peace to earth, good will to men. Go in peace.
I shall, sir. I shall.
Then did Christian address himself to go back, and Evangelist, after he had kissed him, gave him one smile and bid him Godspeed. So he went on with haste. Neither spake he to any man by the way, nor, if any asked him, would he vouchsafe them an answer. He went like one that was all the while treading on forbidden ground, and could by no means think himself safe, till again he was got in the way which he had left to follow Mr. Worldly Wiseman's counsel. So, in process of time, Christian got up to the gate. Now over the gate there was written, Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. He knocked, therefore, more than once or twice.
May I now enter here? Will he within open to sorry me, though I have been an undeserving rebel? If so, then shall I not fail to sing his lasting praise on high?
At last there came a grave person to the gate named Goodwill.
Who knocks there?
A poor burdened sinner fleeing unto Mount Zion from the city of destruction.
With that he quickly opened the gate. And when Christian was but beginning to enter in, he gave him such a mighty jerk so as to nearly bring him sprawling upon the ground.
Dear sir, what did you mean by giving me such a violent jerk?
Heard thee not the many thumpings on the door immediately as soon as it was shut fast behind thee?
Aye.
Open a little and peep thee out the crack to see what they were.
Fiery darts!
Aye, arrows.
Stabbed into the door!
Aye.
And for whom were these messengers of death sent?
For thee, dear traveler, for thee.
Whence came they?
Look! Careful now, not too wide. Do you see that strong castle erected but a short distance from this gate?
Aye.
'Tis the castle of the enemy, of which Beelzebub himself is the captain.
It is?
And from its walls he And they that be with him shoot arrows at those that come up to this gate, if haply they may kill them ere ever they be entered in.
Then have I great cause to rejoice and tremble.
Aye, indeed. But tell me, how is it that ye came all alone?
Because none of my neighbors saw their danger as I saw mine.
Did any of them know you were coming?
Oh, yes. Almost the entire town.
But did none of them follow you to persuade you to go back?
Yes, both Obstinate and Pliable. But when they saw that they could not prevail, Obstinate went railing back. But Pliable came with me until we came to the Slough of Despond, into which we both suddenly fell.
You must have taken your eyes off of the light.
So I did.
What then?
Then was my neighbor Pliable discouraged, and would not venture farther.
Alas, poor man. Is the celestial glory of so little esteem with him, that he counted it not worth running the hazard of a few difficulties to obtain it?
Truly, if the truth be known, I am no better than he.
Why so, say? Went he not back, and came you not on?
'Tis true. He went on back to his own house. But I also turned aside to go into the way of death.
To the town Morality?
Yes.
Directed thereto by the carnal arguments of one Mr. Worldly Wiseman, I suppose.
How did you know?
This wicked one doth attack nearly all with his carnal reasoning. And frankly, there be few that escape his snare.
Then have I all the more reason to be thankful to my lord.
He would have had you to seek for ease at the hands of Mr. Legality, I suppose.
Aye.
Very cheats, the both of them. But say on, did you truly take his vile counsel?
Yes, at least as far as I durst. I was nearly crushed by the weight of that fearful mountain.
That mountain has been the death of many, and will be the death of many more yet, who shall seek to enter in by the works of their own hands. It is well that you escaped being by it dashed into pieces.
And so now am I come, more fit for death by that mountain than thus to stand talking with my lord. But oh, what a favor this is to me, that unworthy me should yet be admitted entrance here.
We make no objections against any.
Against none?
None. Notwithstanding all that they have done before they come hither, they are in no wise cast out.
Thank God.
Yes. Now, therefore, good Christian, come a little with me, and I will teach thee about the way thou must go. Look. Before thee, dost thou see this narrow way?
Aye.
That is the way thou must go.
But it is so narrow.
It was cast up by the patriarchs, the prophets, Christ, and his apostles.
But it is so narrow.
It was wide enough for Christ.
Truly?
Aye.
Then it be wide enough for me.
It is called by our Lord the Straight Way, and was laid out so by himself. This is the way thou must go.
But are there not turnings, nor windings by which a stranger may lose his way?
Nay, none. But there are many ways that join down upon this one, they all being wide and easy of travel.
Then I shall be confused.
Nay, for only the right way is straight and narrow.
Then the wayfaring man, though a fool, need not err therein?
None need err. Now 'tis time to be off on thy journey.
One thing, dear Goodwill.
Being?
Canst thou help me off with this burden upon my back? For I can by no means get it off myself. Neither is there any to help me.
No. Thou must be content to bear it until thou comest to the place of deliverance. For there it will fall from thy back of itself.
When shall this be?
Sooner than you think, and longer than you wish. Only be content with thy Lord's timing.
Then let me gird up my loins and address myself to my journey. What lies ahead next?
When you have gone some distance from this gate, you will come to the house of the interpreter.
What do I there?
Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. Seek his wisdom, and ye shall find. Ask for help, and it will be given unto you.
Thank you, dear Goodwill. God be with thee.
Fare thee well, good Christian. Godspeed.
And so he traveled on without event till he came to the house of the interpreter. There he knocked over and over until...
Who goes?
Sir, I be a man coming from the city of destruction, and I am bound for Mount Zion.
Oh?
I was told by the man that stands at the gate of this way...
Gate?
Yes, the wicket gate that stands at the head of this way.
Ah...
He said that if I called here, you would show me excellent things, such as would be helpful to me on my journey.
Ah, then do come in. Follow me, and I will show thee that which will indeed profit thee.
Most gladly.
So he had him into a private room, and bid his man to open a door. The which, when he had done, Christian saw the picture of a very grave and important person hung up against the wall.
Oh, my! Such a glorious painting!
Now, this was the fashion of it. It had eyes lifted up to heaven, the book of books in its hand, the law of truth was written upon its lips, the world was behind its back. It stood as if it pleaded with men, and a crown of gold did hang over its head.
What meaneth this fine work of art?
The man whose picture this is one of a thousand. He can say, in the words of the apostle, though ye have 10,000 instructors in Christ, yet have you not many fathers? For in Christ Jesus I have begotten you through the gospel.
What meaneth his upward gaze, dear interpreter?
It meaneth that his work is to seek out and to know the dark mysteries of the kingdom.
And what of the book in his hands and the words writ on his lips?
It is the best of books. And out of it doth proceed the words of truth written upon his lips.
And what of his pleading look?
It is to show his love for the lost. His work it is to continually plead with the lost that they might accept the Lord of the way.
Ah, and then doth the world pictured so far behind him show forth his disdain for earthly treasures.
So you have rightly discerned. And the crown that hangs immediate over his head doth show forth the glory of his reward.
He seems to be a great and noble person.
And so he is. And it is he alone whom thy Lord hath appointed to be thy guide.
Then most gladly will I follow his voice.
If you so do, he shall guide thee safely through all the difficult places of this way and lay thee down at last in green pastures.
Thanks be to God.
Indeed. Come.
Then he took him by the hand and led him into a very large parlor that was full of dust, because never swept, the which, after he had reviewed it a while, the interpreter called for a man to sweep.
Did you call for me, sir?
Yes. I want you to sweep this room clean of all this dust.
Yes, sir.
Now, when he began to sweep, the dust began so abundantly to fly about that Christian had almost therewith been choked.
Dear interpreter, help!
A gospel? Gospel. Come here, my dear.
Did you call, sir?
Yes. Come. Come, bring hither water and sprinkle the room.
Now there came in a maid who did as she was bidden, the which, when she had done, it was swept and cleansed with pleasure.
What means this? For I perceive an allegory here.
This parlor is the heart of a man that was never sanctified by the sweet grace of the gospel. The dust is his desire to evil, and inward corruptions that have defiled the whole man. He that began to sweep it at first is the law, but she that brought water and did sprinkle it is the gospel.
Ah.
Now, thou sawest that as soon as the first began to sweep, the dust of evil desire was stirred up.
Aye. And as he swept in one corner, it seemed to fly through the air and settle yet more heavily in another.
This is to show thee that the law, instead of cleansing the heart of sin by its working, instead doth revive and put strength into and increase it in the soul.
Why is this so?
Because the law is a mirror for thy soul. A mirror may show thee thy need of cleansing ever so clearly, yet it hath not power to cleanse thee of one small spot.
Ah.
So it is with the law. It doth most clearly discover to thee thy sins and forbid them, but it doth not give power to subdue.
'Tis true. 'Tis this very law that liked near to crush me as I approached the town of morality. And 'tis this very law that doth impose this great burden upon my back.
Aye. The law hath great power to show forth thy need, but hath none to relieve it. But did you notice the damsel that did sprinkle the water?
Of a certainty I did. She like to have saved me from a dusty death.
Aye, in like manner shall sin be vanquished and subdued by the sprinkling of faith.
Indeed?
Aye, and thus shall thy soul be cleansed and be made into a temple fit for the habitation by the King of Glory.
Verily? Can it be so?
If thou canst believe, all things are possible to him that believeth.
Lord, I believe. Help thou mine unbelief.
Yeah, come.
There is more.
Why, much more.
I saw, moreover, in my dream that the interpreter took him by the hand and had him into a little room where sat two little children, each one in his own chair. The name of the eldest was Passion.
Give me that toy!
And the name of the other, Patience. Passion seemed to be much discontented.
Hurry up, would you?
But Patience was very quiet.
By what reason is the one child so discontent?
Because his governor would have him wait for his inheritance until the beginning of next year. But he thinks he must have all now.
Then I saw that one came to Passion and brought him a bag of treasure and poured it down at his feet, the which he took up and rejoiced therein, and withal laughed Patience to scorn.
Ha ha ha! I got mine and thee got none. Thou must cry while I have fun. Ha 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 ha!
Such a rude fellow.
Watch, yet more.
You think the governor's bringing your reward later, don't you? Well, you're wrong. Our Lord delays his coming maybe forever. And if you don't get wise like me, you won't get nothing.
'Tis unfair.
Watch as the year doth pass before our eyes.
Then I saw that ere long Passion had lavished away all of his substance and began to be in want. Then did his scorn become sorrow, and his smiles turn to tears. And when he would have repented, there was no one to hear.
It is just and fair thus to be.
Watch on.
Now when the new year came, the governor of the children came with his rewards for to bestow them upon the patients, the which were much the greater due to having gathered interest in the high bank. Then did Patience bow himself courteously and give thanks to the governor for his good advice. But Passion began to rail and curse his unfairness.
Unfair, unfair! He came like a thief in the night. Unfair, unfair, unfair!
To which the governor answered,
Thou in thy lifetime receivest thy good things, and likewise Patience evil things. But now he is comforted, and thou art tormented.
To this Passion had no answer to give, but went into outer darkness with wailing and gnashing of teeth.
I perceive that I have seen yet another allegory.
Aye, these two lads are figures. Passion, of the men of this world, and Patience, of those of the world to come. The men of this world prefer to have all their good things now, rather than later.
Ah, I know their type. Their chief saying is that a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush.
Aye, and that saying hath more authority with them than all the divine testimonies of the good world to come.
But I trow that they, like Passion, will one day be reduced to rags and sorrow, and that at the very time that good men are but beginning to come into their finest treasures.
Thou hast rightly discerned. Come.
Then I saw in my dream that the interpreter took Christian by the hand and led him into a place where was a fire burning against a wall, and one standing by it, always casting much water upon it to quench it.
Out, cursed flame! Out, I say, and out again! Take that!
But no matter how much water was cast, yet did the flames only burn the higher and the hotter.
Water! Out! Out! Out, flame! Out!
What means this?
The fire is the work of grace that is wrought in the heart. He that casts water upon it to extinguish and put it out is the devil.
But it doth seem that the fire seemeth to burn higher and hotter, in spite of his best efforts to put it out.
And the reason for that thou shalt soon see. Come around behind the wall.
So then he had him about to the other side of the wall, where he saw a man with a vessel of oil in his hand, of the which he did continually secretly pour through a golden tube into the fire.
What means this?
This is Christ, who doth continually apply the oil of his grace to sustain the flame of love kindled in the honest heart.
Ah.
Because of Christ's constant help, no matter what the devil may do, the souls of his people prove gracious still.
Aha! A good lesson for me.
Did you notice the man stood behind the wall to maintain the fire?
Aye. Why so?
To teach thee that Christ is always near, though doubts may come and fears assail.
Then, when I be tempted most, I can be assured that he who applies the oil is the more near at hand.
Aye. He is the one that sticketh closer than a brother. He hath abundant oil and will not suffer thee to be tempted above that which ye are able to bear.
To God be praises.
Aye. Come.
I saw also that the interpreter took him again by the hand and led him into a pleasant place where was built a stately palace, beautiful to behold, at the sight of which Christian was greatly delighted. He saw also upon the top thereof certain persons walking who were clothed all in gold.
May we go in thither?
Aye, someday. If thou art faithful unto death, come.
Then the interpreter took him and led him up toward the door of the palace. And behold, at the door stood a great company of men, all greatly desirous of going in, but daring not to go.
Well, go on.
After you, good sir.
Not at all. Age before beauty, you know.
To the contrary, 'tis fools rush in.
There also sat a writer at a little distance from the door, at a table side, with a book and his inkhorn before him.
To what purpose this writer?
His work it is to take the name of him that should enter therein.
Come, come. Is there not a man among you with enough faith to take the kingdom of heaven by violence?
No answer.
None.
Do they not desire the kingdom?
Aye, with all their hearts.
Then why do they wait?
Look, look past the drawbridge.
Looking therein, he saw standing many men in armor to keep it, being resolved to do to the men that would enter what hurt and mischief they could. Then was Christian near to be in tears, because there was found none that could enter in.
Well, aren't you going in?
You were here first. I shall follow after thee.
Not at all. Age before beauty, you know.
To the contrary, 'tis fools rush in.
At last, when every man started back for fear of the armed men, Christian saw a man of a very stout countenance come up to the man that sat there to write.
Set down my name, sir.
Done, good sir. Have on.
Look, ye see, mate. So, a fool has come to engage us in battle, has he?
Good. My sword has been too long thirsting for
blood. Aye, and the nails on my club have grown rusty. Come, fool.
Will he battle them all alone?
Only to the eye of appearance.
But they be giants, and that many and all of a fierce countenance.
They be paper giants who hope never to win a battle.
What do you mean?
Watch and see.
Christian beheld as the man put on his head a helmet of salvation, about his loins a belt of truth, and over his breast a breastplate of righteousness. On his feet he placed the swift sandals of the preparation of the gospel of peace, which would enable him to dart here and there among his enemies as a ray of light. Then, taking up his faithful shield, which was impervious to the fiery darts, and the sharp two-edged sword, which cutteth quickly into the very bone and marrow, he was off in a rush against the armed men at the door.
Stop him!
Get him!
Onto his head! Organize men!
Bring forth Rian!
March room! Stop him!
He has no chance!
Watch!
The men at the door laid upon him with deadly force. But the men, not at all discouraged, fell to cutting and hacking most fiercely.
You shall not stop me with your paper swords and fierce masks. Take that!
Help! Send for a legion!
Nor shall I fall back, though you call forth a multitude more vicious than thou. Back, I say, and back again! Take that! And that!
No! Have mercy!
There be no mercy for such impostors as thee.
Received and given many wounds to those that attempted to keep him out, he cut his way through them all and pressed forward into the palace and toward the prize of his high calling. At his pressing through, there was a pleasant voice heard from those that were within, even of those that walked upon the top of the palace.
Come in, come in! Eternal glory, thou shalt win.
Come in.
enter into the glory of thy Lord. Come in.